There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Lots to do in today's show. And later on in this hour, we'll take you to Washington as the dueling press conferences of from Pelosi to President Trump. That's been going on. Lots have been said. We'll get you some of that audio and get your reaction. But we'll stay in state news right now and politics here in the state of Alabama. This is a story that I really just saw the first bit of this yesterday, and I said, really? This is interesting. As a report out now on a new commission in the state of Alabama, I think you heard me mention it this morning, that would, look into what happens in general fund, the budgeting in general fund, and I probably have that all wrong. It's okay, because this new commission, the brainchild of State Senator Arthur Orr, and he's joining us right now. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Sean. Good to be with you this morning, or I should say this afternoon.
Explain. So, the Commission on Evaluation of Services. What exactly? If you had to do the elevator thing, and somebody said, "What is this?"
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. What is this thing?
But here. Let me kind of unpack this for you. I have served as a budget chair of the general fund or education budget. Now, probably, I guess I am the longest serving budget chair currently in Montgomery. And one of the things I found that's been very frustrating is we find that there's little evaluation of programs or different operations of agencies in state government. And what I mean by that is an enterprising governor, let's say, would come out in the 1990s or 1980s, and they would start certain programs and initiatives. Well, here we are 40 years later, and we still have some of these legacy programs that were initiated, and they've got a full staff, they've got funding, and we really haven't evaluated, is this the best way to deliver these services, or are we getting the value of the ROI that we need to get for the taxpayers to perform these services? And you find very little evaluation, and I'll be kind of generally critical of government in general, in that I found that many times the bureaucracy wants to protect the bureaucracy. And by that I mean people want to keep their jobs, and that's understandable. But when it comes time to evaluating different functions of state government, the human nature of I want to keep my job, I want to grow this particular area and perpetuate it, always trumps the hard look that we need to take and say, is this really worth the money we're spending on it?
Now, if you're just joining us, talking to State Senator, Budget Chair Arthur Orr, and, of course, architect of the Commission on Evaluation of Services. So am I using the wrong term if I say that y'all will be doing an audit of these parts of the general fund finance groups?
Well, and our purview can be educational agencies and entities as well.
Oh, okay.
Primarily, it'll be focused on general fund agencies. But audit is in the sense that, did they balance, what's their budget, those kind of things. No, but it will be a performance audit or an outcomes-based audit of, are we getting the value for the dollars that we're investing in all the jobs that we have or people or personnel dedicated to a particular program? And, in hearing from agency heads, Sean, through the years sitting in my office, you'd be amazed, and these are appointees by a governor, they share their frustration when it comes to battling the bureaucracy. They come in, they may want to make some changes or really look at things or shake up a particular agency, and they sit there and say, Senator, I'm so frustrated because everywhere I turn within the agency, I get pushback, and I get, oh, no, nothing here, keep moving, or we looked at that several years ago, it's all good. And that's where I get back to the perpetuation of just the what can become an employment agency in state government, where employees many times want to just keep their jobs and keep their heads down and show up and then go home, and nobody, again, is really asking the hard questions. Are we getting the value for what we're paying for? And as legislators, my cohort in this, Representative Rich Wingo, makes a point of how difficult it is to budget when you don't know the value of the various programs that you're funding as a part-time legislator. So I may have seen it more up closely as a budget chair than somebody like Representative Wingo, but still, that's a general frustration across the legislative branch.
Okay, so the way I'm understanding that you're looking into these agencies and finding out, hey, what is it that y'all do, and then figuring out what we, the taxpayers of Alabama, are paying for them to do that, right? Is it something we need done, and what does it cost?
Right, but we know those things, but what are the outputs? In other words, are we spending, I'm making up numbers, but are we spending $4.2 million on a program that affects 200 children?
Gotcha.
Is that value received for the taxpayer? Or is there another agency doing the same darn thing across the street, focusing on the same targeted population? So why are we duplicating these services across the state? Should we not house them all in one agency? And many times you find silos, particularly in the health and human services type arena, when it comes to delivery of governmental services. So it's going to be a long undertaking, and we're fortunate that Governor Ivey is interested in this. And I think we all win, the executive branch, the legislative branch, when the taxpayers' monies are well spent.
Yeah, and I want to circle back around to that, because involving the legislative and the executive branch, I guess a lot of people believe this is the way to do it, not one or the other. But I want to set the stage again, though, because I lament this when it's budgeting time and I'm watching what y'all are doing in Montgomery, and I point out that pretty much y'all are dealing with 7% of the budget, right? I mean, we have the earmarked, we have, what, if not the most, the second most earmarked budget in the nation?
That's correct, but interestingly enough, I can somewhat debunk that number. It's actually up close to 90% earmarked, but 50% of that percentage is earmarked to education.
Right.
So that's money within the education budget that we can move around. We give it to colleges, or we can give it to K-12 or whomever. So we've got the flexibility. That would take our earmark down to roughly 40% that we have in the state. A lot of these earmarks go to large agencies like mental health, DHR, and others that we're funding out of the discretionary pot anyway. So in other words, if their budget is $10 and they've got $3 worth of earmarked money, we fund them with the $7 just in our discretionary money. So the earmark, if it went away, we'd still be funding them at $10.
And so with that earmarking, if I understand it correctly, Senator, there's a revenue stream that funds that. There's something's been enacted, whether it was enacted last session or 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago, that money from this, whatever it is, this tax, this fee, or whatever,
right,
comes from here and goes to fund this entity or this agency within the state government, right?
That's correct, and where it does,
that seems
make a
clunky. That
I
seems
think,
really but, clunky. It seems like that is not the most efficient way to do something.
Well, and I'll give you some examples where we have totally earmarked agencies: the insurance department, the banking department, the ADEM is primarily an earmarked agency. So we've got some, and when they do have, quote, their own money, end quote, there's not a lot of scrutiny that goes on in those agencies, albeit they are smaller ones, and the revenues that they raise. For example, the banking department all comes from the banks across state government. So it's somewhat of a siloed or just in a particular area where the revenues are raised from the same entity that the agency is regulating.
Right, but it, you know, as things change, you could have different priorities, right? And maybe this silo gets merged with that silo for efficiency, or one is broken free because it's now become bigger than the other part of what it was doing before.
Oh, I agree. Yes, that is correct.
Now, you mentioned Governor Ivey, so let's talk about the executive branch. Senator Orr, why is it important to have, I mean, y'all are legislators. Why do you want to bring the executive branch into y'all's business?
That's an excellent question, Sean. And so the point is, I said this in the opening statement of the commission's meeting earlier this week, it will make it tougher to have the executive branch at the table. In other words, it would be an easier lift just to have a room full of legislators, but to get the buy-in and to get the working together where the executive branch is not on defensive, because it's basically their tent under whom the camel's nose is poking, it's important to have them at the table and have them as partners and working collaboratively, that we're not out for, you know, grabbing headlines and trying to make a bunch of political hay by finding a bunch of waste, fraud, and abuse, but working with them with the end goal for the taxpayer dollars to be well spent in the state budget.
Now, well, you talked about this, you know, that you've spent more time, obviously, as a budget chair than you're even talking about specifically Representative Wingo, but that's true of the majority of the people in the House and the Senate. So are you going to come session? Will they get a dossier on the things you find, or where will they be able to get this information as they go to make choices when y'all are in session and you're signing budgets?
Well, you know, it's going to take a quite some time to gear up, because we're talking, you know, multi-billion dollar agencies. As I had, as budget chair, put money in the budgets for the past 2 or 3 years to fund this operation that's very similar to what we're starting in the Legislative Services Agency. But if we were going to have a joint legislative executive type entity, we needed to pull that group out of the legislative domain and make them independent and stand them up as this independent entity with supervision by both the executive and the legislative branch.
Yeah, so it would be fact-based, but I mean, I think that's important, right? That the information that comes out won't be, even if somebody else is in your position or somebody else is in the Blunt Mansion or somebody else is representing Southwest Alabama, whatever it is, that information is going to be there for them to look at as fact.
That is correct.
So you think this is something that, you talk about the years ahead, is this something that before it's finished people will be able to get information, or are you going to say, hey, let us get this all done, or how does that work?
No, as we go agency by agency, then we will be looking at, we'll be able to submit reports that both the legislative and executive branch can consider when it comes to, if you're the governor, making budgetary proposals. But at the end of the day, if the taxpayers' money is well spent, we'll all win. And if we can avoid any political squabbles and avoid the grandstanding, I think, you know, again, the end goal will be reached. I'll tell you this, that is just anecdotally, I was talking to a lobbyist yesterday, and he says, boy, they're really talking a lot about this commission in Montgomery. And I said, really? It's kind of boring, nerdy, inside baseball stuff. And he said, oh, no. He said, I'm hearing about it everywhere. You got people worried. Well, you know, Sean, I think that's a good thing.
Yes.
That tells me if they're worried in Montgomery, then there may be some things we really will hopefully find. Again, I don't want to find them, but that's part of our job, to find the inefficiencies and the programs need to be wound down or rebooted and made more efficient.
You know, I think the fact that it's a group of you, it's not just you, I mean, it's your brainchild, but it's not just you, should calm some of those fears, because, and not saying you specifically, but when you have a group of people, then somebody goes, oh, well, I'll worry that this one, you know, this one member of the Senate or this one member of the House or the executive branch doesn't like us. There's checks and balances built in, I guess, because there's a lot of voices on this.
Well, that's, yeah, so you're correct. That's where we get away from the grandstanding, and if we can take care of situations quietly and in a good form and let the governor, whomever that person may be, lead, hopefully. And then, again, to me, that is the most effective way to roll this thing out, as perhaps as we do find some things that need to be changed. As I said, in a perfect world, we'd hopefully not find anything, but my suspicions tell me otherwise.
All right. When do y'all start putting pencil to paper, get working on this? Is it immediate, or is there a start date?
Well, we've got a staff that we inherited from the Legislative Services Agency, but we'll go through a due diligence period of making sure that's the staff that we want to keep, and that'll take place over the fall. And then I think once we've determined the staffing, we'll be ready to roll forward and to use the work product they've already started as a jump start to get moving on really getting in for the deep dives on some of these agencies.
I look forward to getting you back on once those deep dives begin and we start finding out about what's going on inside those agencies in state government. Senator Arthur Orr, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us, and come back on the show soon.
Thank you so much, Sean. Good to be with you.
State Senator Arthur Orr joining us. There you go. It's the Commission on Evaluation of Services. This is one of these things you're going to hear here now, and then a few months will go by, and then everybody else will start talking about it. But lucky you, you're already on board and know what it's all about. All right, coming right back, we'll look at Washington. It was dueling press conferences. We'll get the president's take on what Speaker Pelosi, what Adam Schiff had to say today. It's all straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile. And in hour number two, what a story about getting people on the right track to work. Talking about what's happening with Ransom Ministries. Y'all got to stay tuned for hour number two as well.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
By the way, if you want to read some more detail on what we were just talking to Senator Arthur Orr about, that Commission on Evaluation of Services, you can get more over at aldailynews.com, Alabama Daily News. Todd Stacey's website, they got a good write-up on it over there. It's pretty interesting. You've got State Senator Arthur Orr. You have Othney Latham, Director of Legislative Service Agency, on there. You have Finance Director Kelly Butler. So you have a mix, and you have Representative Wingo. You have a combination of legislative and executive branch. I think that's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't want to say that it's going to not work, because it may work just fine. But, you know, in the executive branch, they don't have the same responsibilities as the legislative branch, right? They sign off on a budget or something, but they don't make the budget. So it's a lot easier in the executive branch to be Santa Claus, you know, to be say, no, I think that's good. I want that group, and I want those people to have funding, and I want those people and this thing, and that's great, and all. So there's going to be a clash, I think, when you look at the legislative and the executive branch, but that's probably a good thing. You know, that I think Senator Orr said it was a heavier lift, and quite often that keeps one side keeps the other one in check. You get a better, you don't get a personal bias. You might have many personal biases, but they're all put together, and you end up getting something that maybe compromise isn't the right word, but you get I think you get a better perspective on issues. So we'll watch this, but it is weird. I mean, how we are layer of old paint upon layer of old paint, and we're not the only state. But I know everybody wants to go back and rewrite the Constitution of the state of Alabama. Well, not everybody. There are some people. There's people like me that go, oh, gosh, what kind of worms, can of worms should we open there? But there's some argument to be made for it. But until that point, we're dealing with the decisions of people long since dead. you know, what they thought was right and divisions. And then, you know, you have somebody come in and they don't remove something. They just add a new program, right? They want to be, the people want this addressed. Well, instead of just saying, well, maybe we can slightly angle whatever state agency we have right now to doing something new or bringing something else under its purview, let's start the new agency of so-and-so. So then you get then another governor and another Senate and another House members come in and they do their thing. And then, so I think it's good that we're looking at it. All right. Run to the national news here. And when we come back, we'll give you some of the national news. As it was press conference day, Speaker Pelosi and Schiff had a press conference. The president was meeting, I think, with the president of Finland and had a little time to react to what was said by Speaker Pelosi. So we'll get the president's comments coming up in just a second. And in hour number two of the show, I was mentioning this. I do not want you to miss this. So even if you normally listen for an hour and then go back into the office, stream us on the website or on your smartphone on one of the apps, because we're going to talk about Ransom Ministries. And this is Matt's going to join us from Ransom Ministries, something that they're doing right here in Mobile, putting people that are have had a tough time, homeless, criminal activity, those kind of folks, teaching them the value of work, getting them into the system. It's really a positive thing. Starting at one.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, Dalton, watch this. The heart scare for Bernie Sanders. Senator Sanders will end up being caused by polonium. No, I don't mean that seriously. No. Tell you, out of all the people running on the Democrat ticket, the person I'd like to sit down and talk with would be Bernie Sanders, because in the I think he truly believes what he says, and that's somebody I think I could have a fair debate with. I don't think he's. I mean, he's not gotten a new shtick. It's the same one he's had for forever. And maybe a few things he and I'd agree on, but it would be a very interesting discussion, I think, with him. It's one the only Democrat I think that's running that I'd like to sit down and talk with. Godspeed. Bernie Sanders hope he's better. Right now, they have, they said canceled campaign events going forward for now. No, they canceled everything for now, so we'll watch that story. Also, going on in Washington, President Trump was there with the Finnish president, right? He was sitting there. They had a conversation. You know how they do. And they come in, and it really what you're supposed to be doing is talking about, I don't know, trade with Finland or something like that. But of course, nobody wants to talk about that. The press is in there, and President Trump, I think, revels in it and got right into it with the press. So let's go to it. This is just from about an hour ago, President Trump answering some questions. He goes on a little bit of a tear here and then answers some questions.
Okay, thank you all very much.
President Trump has responded to concerns that you are putting the whistleblower's life in danger.
Well, the whistleblower was very inaccurate. The whistleblower started this whole thing by writing a report on the conversation I had with the president of Ukraine. And the conversation was perfect. It couldn't have been nicer. I saw Rick Scott. I saw many of the senators talking about it, many of the congressmen talking about it. Not a thing wrong. Unless you heard the Adam Schiff version where he made up my conversation. He actually made it up. It should be criminal. It should be treasonous. He made it up, every word of it, made up, and read to Congress as though I said it. And I'll tell you what. He should be forced to resign from Congress. Adam Schiff, he's a lowlife. He should be forced to resign. He took a perfect conversation, realized he couldn't read it to Congress because it was perfect. It was a very nice conversation. I knew many people were on the phone. Not only were many people on the phone, we had stenographers on the phone taking it down word for word. He took that conversation, which was perfect. He said, I can't read this. So he made up a conversation. And he reported it and said it to Congress and to the American people. And it was horrible what he said. And that was supposed to be coming from me, but it was all fabricated. He should resign from office in disgrace. And frankly, they should look at him for treason because he is making up the words of the President of the United States. Not only words, but the meaning. And it's a disgrace. It should not be allowed to happen.
Your own DNI said the call transcript was consistent with the complaint. No,
he didn't say that. You have to take a look. No, he did not say that. And in fact, if you look at what he said, he found everything to be very normal. He's a good man. And Joe, and he found it to be very normal. I saw Schiff trying to go 15, you know, call him Shifty Schiff. We don't call him Shifty Schiff for nothing. He's a shifty, dishonest guy, who, by the way, was critical of one of the great Secretary of States. Graduated number one in his class at West Point. Graduated one of the top in his class at Harvard Law School. The most honorable person, Mike Pompeo. And this guy was negative on Mike Pompeo. He can't, you know, there's an expression, he couldn't carry his blank strap. I won't say it because they'll say it was so terrible to say. But that guy couldn't carry his blank strap. Do you understand that? So you deal with bad people. And, you know, I watched China over the last few days, and I watched some of these other countries build up. And we built up more than any of them because of me. But no help due to the Democrats. They're a disaster. They're the do-nothing Democrats. They don't do any work. All they want to do is try and win the election in 2020. So they come up with this impeachment nonsense, and everyone knows. The conversation, all based on one phone call that I had, where I'm talking to the president of Ukraine. You'll hear from our ambassadors. You'll hear from some of the folks that know all about the call, why the call was set up, and everything else. It's perfect. The call was perfect. In fact, Lindsey Graham said, I didn't know you could be so nice. There was no quid pro quo. Remember before they said, the only reason I put that out, and I did it with the approval of Ukraine, by the way, otherwise I couldn't have done it, was because the whistleblower was so dishonest. The whistleblower said terrible things about the call, but I then found out he was secondhand and third hand. In other words, he didn't know what was on the call. No, these are bad people. These are dishonest people. And when the American people find out what happened, it's going to be a great day. And you know what? We have to go back to building our country because 99% of Nancy Pelosi's time is spent on this. She should worry about lowering the price of drugs, which I've done. But it's hard to do it without the help of Congress, about creating border security, which I've done. We now have hundreds of miles of wall under construction on the southern border. She should worry about infrastructure. She should worry about the USMCA. She's not doing it. I just saw a part of a press conference before the president came. I'm sorry to bother you with this, Mr. President, because we have other things to talk about. But I will tell you, I just watched part. She says, oh, drug prices. Well, she's been trying to get drug prices down for how long has she been in Congress? For years. She should focus on her own district. Do you see what's happening to her district? We call it Tent City. It's terrible. In fact, we just sent a violation to the city of San Francisco. Unsafe water, unsafe conditions, environmental, EPA. Our EPA, which is doing a great job, is sending Nancy Pelosi, with all the talk about EPA, there's needles and drugs all over the street, there's tents, there's people that are dying in squalor. In the best location, in San Francisco. It used to be a great city. Now you have to see what's happened to San Francisco. You happen to see what the Democrats have allowed to happen. As an example, what they've allowed to happen, just take a look to Los Angeles, great cities. One other thing. Yesterday, as you know, I was sued by the governor, Gavin Newsom. He's another beauty. I was sued by him. He's a do-nothing. Sued by him so that I can't get on the ballot in the state of California. It was a massive story. It was the biggest story, Mr. President. It was headlines all over the place. Trump gets sued by this do-nothing governor in California. It was big. Here's what happened. Yesterday, I won the case very convincingly. A very tough, smart, highly respected judge, not a Trump person at all, not appointed by Trump, appointed by somebody that you would call the opposition, came out with a scathing and tough opinion. I won the case. I didn't see one story that I won that case. Not one story. From the fake news. I didn't see Steve write it. I didn't see you write it. I didn't see anybody write it. So let me just tell you, just to finish. Nancy Pelosi and Shifty Shift, who should resign for in disgrace, by the way, and Jerry Nadler and all of them. It's a disgrace what's going on. And we should be focused on making America great again and keeping America great, because that's what we have to do. And when I look at that parade with military and millions of people and everything else, we better get smart. We better start focusing on the right things. Because what they did with this nonsense, think of it. You have a perfect, I mean, perfect conversation with a president of another country, Ukraine in this case. And they try and say, oh, let's impeach him. They've been trying to impeach me from the day I got elected. I've been going through this for 3 years. They've been trying to impeach me from the day I got elected. And you know what? They failed. And this is the easiest one of all, because this one is based on one conversation. What about Obama's conversation with the president of Russia, where he says, hey, tell Vlad I'll talk to him after the election's over. I'll talk to him. Nobody reports that, right? That stuff you should report. But you people should be ashamed of yourself. We have the most dishonest media that you can imagine, and you should be ashamed of yourselves. Okay, I think I've answered most of your questions. What do you think?
Finnish media here. Finland is the happiest country in the world.
Finland is a happy country.
What can you learn? What can you learn from Finland?
Well, if you got rid of Pelosi and you got rid of Shifty Schiff.
We have time to discuss about that.
Finland is a happy country. He's a happy leader, too. No Republicans have raised concerns.
About the whistleblower, that the identity of the whistleblower should be protected.
I don't care. Look, I think a whistleblower should be protected if the whistleblower's legitimate. But when the whistleblower makes a big report on the conversation I had with a president of Ukraine, and it was a great conversation. We talked mostly about congratulations on your win. We talked about corruption, and we're really referring mostly to 2016, because what the Democrats did in 2016 was corrupt. And let's see what happens. They're more concerned with that than they are with me and impeachment. They're trying to hide what maybe is coming. I let our great, I let our great law enforcement take care of it, okay? Attorney General Barr, I guess, is working on it, and I hope he's working on it, because what happened in 2016 is a disgrace to this country. And they're more worried about that, because they know they're guilty as hell, all right?
All right, Teddy, we're coming right back. More from the president's comments just about an hour ago, reacting to the press conference from Speaker Pelosi and also what was said by Adam Schiff today. We'll be right back. More Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And speaking of which, Auburn football coverage starts the pregame at 11:30 on Saturday here at FM Talk 106.5. All right, 12:50, Midday Mobile, getting right back into comments from the president just about an hour ago as he's reacting to the presser from Speaker Pelosi, also what Adam Schiff had to say, and some of his own thoughts.
When a whistleblower, okay, are you ready? I heard the whistleblower's report from you people and how bad it was about just a simple conversation. By the way, this whole thing revolves around a simple conversation. And if you remember at the beginning, it was quid pro quo. That's all you heard about. And I think he said 7 or 8 times, quid pro. In other words, you're going to do that or we're not going to give you money. You're going to do this or we're not going to. I never said it. But when I heard these horrible stories come out, I had no choice but to release a conversation, which I hate to do, and I hope I don't have to do it again, with the leader of a country. I asked a certain person to call up a certain person in that country to get permission to do it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to do it. And if I didn't do it, and I appreciate Ukraine for allowing us to release the conversation, but it was so innocent, it didn't hurt them. If anything, it helped them, because it was a very innocent conversation. But when a whistleblower takes that very nice, innocent, Lindsey Graham said, I never knew you were that nice a person. He said, you never asked him for anything. You were really, really nice. Lindsey was saying, I never knew you were so nice. That was a perfect conversation. I heard Rick Scott today say that was a perfect conversation.
How can they impeach him on that conversation? He read it. He's a very smart guy from Florida, Rick Scott. And he said, that was a perfect conversation. How can you impeach somebody on that conversation? But the whistleblower wrote not that conversation. He wrote a vicious conversation. In other words, he either got it totally wrong, made it up, or the person giving the information to the whistleblower was dishonest. And this country has to find out who that person was, because that person's a spy, in my opinion. You ready? So when a whistleblower, purposely or not, give something that's totally erroneous. Now, here's where I fooled them. They never thought I'd release the conversation. They never thought in a million years that I'd release the conversation. When little Adam Schiff saw the text, when he read it, he couldn't believe it. When Nancy Pelosi, who worked a day early, Nancy Pelosi called for essentially impeachment, let's impeach the president, before she saw the transcript. And this is an exact word-for-word transcript of the conversation, right? Taken by very talented stenographers. Listen to me. So when she saw that, she went crazy. She said, we can't impeach him of this conversation. That's a great conversation. She went by the whistleblower. And the whistleblower was so bad, I wouldn't even think about it. But here's what happened. The whistleblower was wrong. The only thing that matters is the transcript of the actual conversation that I had with the president of Ukraine. It was perfect. We're looking at congratulations. We're looking at doing things together. And what are we looking at? We're looking at corruption. And in, I believe, 1999, there was a corruption act or a corruption bill passed between both and signed between both countries, where I have a duty to report corruption. And let me tell you something. Biden's son is corrupt, and Biden is corrupt. And I'd rather run against Biden than almost any of those candidates, and I think they're all weak. But I think Biden has never been a smart guy, and he's less smart now than he ever was. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Let me do that again. It's a fair question. So this morning and last night, my comms people came to me. Listen to this one, President. I'm glad they're interested in Finland, but what can you do? I'm interested in Finland much more. But my comms people came to me and they said, sir, there's a book or something being written. It's written by Washington Post people, so you know it's inaccurate. You know it's probably a fraud. So two reporters of the Washington... And they said, President Trump started screaming, ranting, and raving that on the southern border, where we are right now building a tremendous wall, it's unbelievable what's going up. Army Corps of Engineers, we're doing a lot. We'll soon have over 100 miles under construction completed. We're going to end up with over 400 to 500 miles. Okay, ready? That I wanted a wall, but I wanted a moat. A moat, whatever that is. Not a word I used, but they used it. A moat. And in the moat, I wanted alligators and snakes. And I wanted the wall to be a fence, and I wanted to be electrified. And I wanted sharp spikes at the top, so if anyone gets it, it goes piercing through their skin, is somewhat the way they said it. Skin-piercing spikes. But I want that whole wall to be electrocuted. And, sir, you never said that. They came to me, the comms people. They came to me yesterday. And they said, did you say this? I said, why are you asking that stupid question? Because the fake news media is saying that you said this in a book. I said, what book? And they said, Washington Post. I said, well, obviously it's fake, because almost everything the Washington Post does is fake. It's a fake newspaper. It's owned by a rich guy for the purposes of giving him power in Washington. It's really, I mean, it's a lobbyist. I call it the lobbyist Washington Post. For Amazon, and he ought to be ashamed of himself, because what they do to his reputation, I think maybe it's probably no good anyway, but what they do to his reputation with the Washington Post is a disgrace. So these two reporters wrote this book, and they said, I want a moat with alligator snakes, electrified fences, so people get electrocuted if they so much as touch the fence, and spikes on top. Never said it, never thought of it, and I actually put out something on social media today. I said, I'm tough on the border, but I'm not that tough. Okay, it was a lie. Just so you have it, you asked the question. It was a total lie. It was corrupt reporting, okay? I don't even use fake anymore. I call the fake news now corrupt news, because fake isn't tough enough. And I'm the one that came up with the term. I'm very proud of it. But I think I'm going to switch it largely to corrupt news, because the media in this country, not everybody, we have some great reporters, some great journalists, but much of it is corrupt. It's corrupt. You have corrupt media in this country, and it truly is the enemy of the people. Thank you very much.
All right, so there's the end of the presser there, and President Trump talking about that thing that had been bouncing around last night and this morning about the moat and the alligators and snakes. I tell you, alligators will eat snakes, too, so it would have probably just ended up being alligators, probably more at the fencing and the electrification. Here's some audio. Dalton, I don't know. I don't think they're running. See if Westwood One has. I think we may be the only ones with this audio. I haven't heard ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, Lifetime, Discovery, Home and Garden TV. I haven't heard any of them with this piece of audio. So I think we're the only ones that have this audio of the president. They said, you know, the comments he made about what he wanted to do down on the border. Let's go ahead and roll it. Cut two. And it's, yeah, go.
You know, I have one simple request, and that is to have sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads.
I don't think that's the president. It does not sound like it doesn't. Let's go back.
And that is to have sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads. Now, evidently, my cycloptic colleague informs me that
must
that
be
can't
Pompeo.
Be done. Can you remind me what I pay you people for? Honestly, throw me a...
Dalton, can we check, can we cross-reference that? That don't know that that is audio from President Trump on that, so during the break, we'll go ahead and look at that and see if that... I just found that piece of audio has not made the light of day anywhere else, but thought it was worth playing. All right, 1257 FM Talk 106.5. By the way, too, I saw this note popped up on the Twitter feed. Roseanne over at WKRG put the story up from Blake Brown. Listen to this. Big bet took place yesterday at the Scarlet Pearl Casino in Mississippi. Jim Mattress McInvale placed a $3.5 million bet on the Houston Astros to win the 2019 World Series at the DraftKings at Scarlet Pearl Sportsbook. Now, once again, that would be for the Astros to win. $3.5 million bet. So, of course, I know the next question here. So what happens if Houston wins the World Series? McInvale collects $11.2 million. With that bet being placed, it's the largest single bet in Mississippi sportsbook history, which is kind of a short, young history, but there. There you go. I guess if you'll cut me in, I'll say go Astros.